This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So, you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So, whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
We are just getting started here on Post Show Recaps talking about it. That's right. It's full spoiler recaps where we're binging a new season of a show every week and chatting about it in full spoilery detail. I'm Jess Sterling Escape. Today we are discussing Amazon Prime Video's miniseries Expats. And of course, I am joined here by my fellow expat, although we both live in our countries of origin, Grace Leader. Grace, how are you?
I don't know. Did I ever tell you? Yeah, I was born in Canada. Yeah, I'm born in Canada, so... my joke was going to be, I have many trans friends who are expats. You know, they used to be named Pat. They changed their name.
Pat, that's fine.
I know. They could be trans men or trans women. You don't know. Yeah.
Okay, now I get it.
It could have been stronger. It's fine. Show's great. Love the show.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just start up front by saying that, like, I am shocked that in doing some research for this podcast, there weren't more glowing reviews about this miniseries because I was gripped from like minute one watching this. Like, I really enjoyed it pretty much the entire way through. Like, there's one episode that I thought was a little slow, but beyond that,
was it the one that was an hour and 40 minutes long?
No, I loved that episode actually, which is kind of crazy because and my takes on long content. But I loved it. I loved this show.
Yeah, I thought it was really good. I mean, you're not gonna lose me when you're like, hey, this show is actually a tragedy about how all these people involved, mm-hmm. Children died. They're all grieving. You figured out it's very dark. Yeah, you got me. I'm gonna watch your show.
I know you love it because it was so dark. It is so dreary and dark. Sad and like difficult, right? Like, I will say, I did have to pace myself when watching the show, and I would try not to watch it too close to when I was going to bed just because of how dark the material is. But I was like very taken by it. I thought it was so good. And I think, for people who might get on its case about, obviously we're focusing on the three American women while we're in Hong Kong, like, fair, but also I think episode 5 goes a long way to like exploring a lot of their help, right? A lot of the people that work for them and exploring Hong Kong and what it was like there in 2014 with the protests. Like, I thought they did a really good job at setting up the different parts of Hong Kong, right? You have like where the expats live, which is very well off, right? It's like very fancy. Mm-hmm. And then of course we have the people. I love the scenes of like all of the people that work for the expats playing cards and hanging out, mm-hmm. and you know, I just thought it did a really good job. And it, like, honestly, it made me want to visit Hong Kong. Like, Hong Kong looks so interesting.
Yeah. I mean, you say the show is like about three Americans, but the cast is quite diverse, you know, Nicole Kidman is obviously the lead here, but I actually think the show does a really good job of like, yes, her story is super important. I think the way that the story revolves around, like the way that these three women, their story is all like, it's like they each have a relationship with the other one, like their stories are interconnected in that way.
Yeah.
But with Sarai Blue and then Jiyoung Yu as Hillary and Mercy respectively, like, yeah, we have a, you know, that's the show. It's called Expats, based on a book by Janice YK Lee. And yeah, I feel like the more the show, like this is, you know, a good example is, I hope we get to a day where we don't need to do this, but Jodie Foster talked about on True Detective about she signed up for this role knowing she would sort of be the name of the show, but that right. it was a story that she would uplift Carrie Reese and the story of Indigenous women, particularly like women who live in the North. And so in this case too, it's like, yeah, Nicole Kidman is the face, the star, the I think by far the biggest name in the show. Yeah, but then the story gets sold to and tells us the story of lots of different women, including many Asian women in Hong Kong. So I really liked it. I thought it was really good. Even I don't really agree with every choice that every character made, and I still am like, yeah, oh, that's yeah. good. Yeah. You know, I think it was interesting and compelling. Kind of the perfect length. I know like 6 episodes, but that we do get that one really long episode. Yeah, I enjoyed it a lot. And I paced myself too this week watching about an episode a day.
That's about what I did as well.
Yeah.
I just like Nicole Kidman. I mean, gosh, it seems silly to say it, but like, yeah, she's incredible. Like I felt like she played a grief-stricken mother like so well, right? Like she just, I think she captured the emotions perfectly, but I have to admit, I was really taken with the character of Hillary Starr.
Yes.
I found her to be so intriguing. And like, again, like this is a story about women. I believe that most if not all of everyone in the writing team were women on this show, which is like,
I think there's only one, maybe two men who are executive producers of like like 7 of them, I think, like
very rare. Yeah. And it shouldn't be, but it is. And so I was happy to see that, especially when this story is about women, right? Like it is like those are the main characters are all women. It is about what their lives are like. It is a lot of it is about motherhood, right? And like, should I not take that decision, right? And I just was so taken with the character of Hillary because she was so interesting to me. Like she's such a different character than what we normally see on television. I say this a lot on podcasts, but I really enjoy when we get female characters that kind of buck the norm of, you know, the let's get married and have a kid and then live happily ever after, right? And she's not sure if she wants kids. And she thought when she got married to her husband that neither of them wanted kids. He changed his mind, which people are allowed to do, but you can't then force the other person to agree with you, right? And so she's not sure. She's secretly on birth control, doesn't tell her husband that she's a lot of issues with her husband and their relationship. But I found her and her relationship with her mother and that whole dynamic so fascinating, especially when you consider that she is a minority. And, you know, there is a theme of kind of like isolation and being alone, being very lonely in the show as well. And so being someone who is America, living in Hong Kong, but she's very well off. And I don't know, the character, she fascinated me. I thought she did, her performance really stood out to me.
Yeah.
In the show. And I thought all of the characters were so interesting and so well developed. And yeah, I was riveted the entire time, the entire way through.
No, I agree. I think Nicole Kidman was great. I think she plays based on her is it Big Little Lies? I feel like sort of like frantic mom is good energy for Nicole Kidman to play. Yes. Is very good in that and in this. I will totally echo your thoughts on Hillary Starr, but since you then just said it, I'll actually give a huge shout out to Jiyoung Yu as Mercy. I thought
she was so good.
I thought she's also incredible. I thought she was so good. There's a moment in the last episode that I was like, oh my God, I don't really cry a lot, but I am going to cry right now. I'm going to shed tear. I thought her performance, you know, they all are, I mean, I'll do a little bit of the plot recap, which is basically that, you know, the show starts off and we have this voiceover from Mercy about talking about these incidents that have happened to people, about, you know, bad things that have happened, accidents. And we eventually reveal that like, she's potentially responsible for one as well. And then we learn in the first episode, but we see the events happen. The timing of this is kind of like present day and then flashback and then forward through time. which is that Margaret's youngest son, Gus, goes missing a night where she's supposed to be being watched at a night market by Mercy, who they had met on a yacht or a boat party a little while ago. And so she feels incredibly guilty for having done that. You never find out whether Gus was murdered, is still alive, etc., which becomes a big,
brutal, right?
Yeah, a big point of conflict between Margaret and her husband, they feel like maybe they want to move back to America, but without a sort of conclusion and knowing what happened to Gus and if he's maybe still alive and how could you leave? What if he turns up? This is a huge source of conflict that's like also causing a lot of stress on their other kids, Daisy and Philip. Meanwhile, we meet Hillary, who, as you mentioned, is on birth control, doesn't want to have kids, but her husband has changed his mind. It says he does want to have kids. So he thinks he's like sterile. He's cheating on Hillary with Mercy, the babysitter, and gets her pregnant. And so then she has this dilemma to face about what to do. Ultimately, she decides doesn't really decide what she's going to do exactly, but decides
like she's gonna keep the baby.
I think so, but she's not going to have David as part of that. And so kind of where we end is like these three women who all are kind of living, I didn't mention this, but Margaret decides to stay back just as the family is flying back home. Yep. So the three women are all continuing to live, but kind of in this moment are like alone. But whether they're not, I don't think it ends on like a sad tone. It certainly ends on this like, I don't know. They're each living their own lives as like independent. We're making choices for themselves rather at the behest of other people. That's where I sort of feel like the show sort of ends its note with these three women who are all, their lives are intertwined. Hillary is like the neighbor downstairs to Margaret as well. So
former really good friend. Then they have a bit of a falling out when Margaret accuses Hillary's husband of possibly being involved in Gus's missing child case.
Right.
The other thing to note about Mercy too is she is a Korean American living in Hong Kong. So constantly imagine being a person who like gets confused for someone who's Chinese and they just start talking. You know what I mean? Constantly she has to say the only thing she really knows is, sorry, I'm Korean, in Chinese. So she's constantly having to correct people. And to me, the thing that stood out for Mercy's storyline and that was like very resonant was the feeling of being alone and being very lonely. Like I felt like she lives a very lonely existence. You know, she lives alone in a very small, like kind of not great apartment. She moved to Hong Kong to get some distance between her and her mother, who's like very overbearing. And she's trying to figure out a job situation. It's when she's texting a friend about, is this a job interview? Like what's going on? That's when she loses Gus, throws her life completely off. Mercy's life is very interesting to me. And I routinely felt really awful for her because obviously being Margaret is very difficult in losing a child and like having that loom over your entire life. But I mean, Mercy, that's going to follow her forever. Like she's never going to forget that. And especially then her becoming pregnant and like, you know, that's on her mind, you know, she's thinking I lost one kid. Like, am I really capable of raising this baby? I was really taken with the way they developed all three of these characters very separately, but of course their stories intertwine a lot. What did you make, Grace? I want to know. I found it very jarring that when we're at the end, it's in the finale, we get these shots that it's like straight on. The characters are looking straight at the cameras and it's very mixed and matched where it's like sometimes Margaret is talking to Hillary. Sometimes Margaret is talking to Mercy and Mercy and Hillary are having a conversation. What did you make of that? Like, how did you feel about that?
It's very confusing when you're trying to figure it out, but I loved it. I loved it as a choice of these three women and then imagining the ways in which all their lives are interconnected. I think it's a really like clever way because I think sometimes, you know, I was talking about the best episodes of TV, recording that earlier today, which will come out later this week. And there's one episode on there that's like full dream sequence. And we talked about like, it can be such a trope of like whether or not this thing happened. And I think that the way that these conversations, you never really know whether or not they've ever happened or these like, you know, I'm sure. Well, I do where it's like you think out how a conversation is going to go. And so is it that, or is it, all of that is each answer to a question or a response. Is that like the other, what that person themselves was thinking? I don't know. I really liked it. And I thought it was a really good way to show, like, I think the thing I can see from this is that, like, I think the book is probably, it's probably a very good book, because I think the show kind of feels like a book. I don't know if that makes sense, but
I know what you mean. Yeah.
You can, like, oh, it feels like it was adapted. So I really, and then, so yeah, this last sequence, that's the conversations, or maybe the conversations that didn't happen, but it's not like the three of them talking. It's like individual one-on-one conversations. I really, really liked it. I thought it was such a interesting choice to make, even despite that I thought it was like a little confusing. Then you're like, yeah. Oh, it's supposed to be sort of like enigmatic, and it's supposed to, like, you know, who knows if it's happening or not, but I, you know, it's the last episode. So we're trying to, like, leave these people in these places. And it's where we get this scene where Mercy says, like, do you want the baby? And Margaret's like, don't you want the baby? And she's like, I do, but I almost feel like I owe you my baby. And like, oh my God, that, what a horrific thing to be thinking.
Yeah.
About the baby you're going to have.
It's brutal. Like, it is, everything about this show felt so brutal. Because we know in episode one that Gus is missing or killed. Like, we don't know the full story. We just know he's not around. And then episode two, like, when they started talking about the night market, and I remembered at the end of the episode one, Margaret and Hillary visiting the night market, I knew that's where it was going to happen. And so my heart was just racing, like, the entire time that they were at the night market, like, knowing that that was what was about to go down. It was so rough. Like, the grief in this show, it feels so heavy because it's a little kid, and because, Grace, you know me, I'm not a huge fan of child actors. It's really tough for me sometimes. However, they cast the cutest little boy to play Gus. The little cutest cast.
Little his boy. Little car. It was a little Transformers car.
And he was so, like, he was so energetic and cute, and obviously gets into so much trouble just, like, being a little boy. You know, he's just a little kid. Of course he's going to get in trouble. But, like, my gosh, they cast the cutest little kid, and then, of course, he goes missing, and it's just, it's heartbreaking. And I thought the way in which they did it, and the way in which they showed the impact on very obviously Margaret and Mercy, but then it extends, like, it's like a spider web, right? Like, it just it goes out from the center, because then you have people like, is Essie, I think that's her name, Essie, the nanny of Margaret's family, and, like, how close she was to Gus and how much it killed her when he went missing and she was supposed to be there. Like, it's devastating.
I thought I don't know that I would have that I loved the choice to have episode one start. I mean, I think it's tough when you're going to talk about a missing kid to maybe you do need to just be like, this is what the show is about, you know, rather than like by the end of episode one. So if you imagine you have the Mercy, like, I love the cinematic choice. Again, I thought some of the choices of the way the show looked. So the pictures of all the people who have had, like, bad things happen to them, I thought was a really, like, stunning choice of these moments of, like, there's, like, two kids holding blankets, and then there's, like, one. And so, you know, that, like, okay, a kid in that scene, like, died. You know, I just thought it was really powerful. But then episode one, we're past Gus being kidnapped, and then we episode two, we flash back and we, like, go through it chronologically. I don't know if I necessarily love that choice, but it's totally fine. But the thing I really loved about episode two is the way that there are all of these complications. I feel like in stories where there's, like, something tragic has happened and something has happened in the family, it's almost like most of the time it's either like, oh, I had this one moment, like the last thing I said to my dad before he died, or like, or it's like perfect. And it's like the show wants to hit you over the head with, like, there was a tragedy in the family, so we want to show you all the moments in which it was perfect to really highlight the fact that now it's really hard. Say, like, a husband dies of cancer. It's like, we're going to show you all of the times he was, like, the sweetest husband ever, to, like, reinforce the point that, like, now sucks that he's gone. But what I thought the show did so interestingly, and it's specifically the scene where Gus won't eat. And so she's trying, and then Essie's like, well, we'll just make him something. And she's like, no, we're not a restaurant. And she's already frustrated with Essie because Essie is like, they love Essie in
Everyone's
a way
that's so close to Essie. Yeah.
That feels like they love her more than their mom. And I remember having conversations as a kid where like, I grew up with three brothers. At the time I was socialized, like I thought I was a boy. So like, I was super close with my mom, but like there were times where like my dad was being the cool, like he's the cool dad, you know? And so my mom sometimes would get frustrated that we would like, my dad would let us get away with a lot more. So like we could very easily my mom and dad, where you'd be like, mom, can I have $5 to go to the store? And my mom would say no, but my dad would say yes. So you would just go to dad. And then my mom would get annoyed by that, right? Like it's very annoying. But this thing with Essie where like Essie is so loved, and then the extra complication of like, and then this kid is going to go missing and he's not here. And like the scenes. So first of all, I love the idea that like Gus was not always an easy child, because I feel like, that's true. I've been at my brother's house where it's like, and I'm sitting there being like, or I'm babysitting. I'm like, oh my God, it's so frustrating that you won't eat the thing that I made for you for dinner. Like, you even asked for this and now you're not eating it. Like, so frustrating. But they're kids. So like, whatever, but you're frustrated in the moment. And so it's frustrating. Then he goes missing. And then the complications with like Essie and with Mercy too, right? That like Mercy like lost him. And I just thought the dynamics felt really lived in the show.
Yeah. Yes. And especially I thought that, you know, one of the really incredible themes that they really dug into was just like the classism, right? Like the differences in the classes where it's, you have people like Essie and Yuri, especially episode 5 stand out, my favorite episode easily. Like I thought it was so interesting that these periphery characters finally come into focus for us. And they do live with the expats, right? They live in these like very lavish places. However, when you see their rooms, they're like tiny, tiny dorm rooms. They sleep in closets compared to these lavish apartments.
The best example, Jess, I think, is when Puri is like, something happens and she goes up to Hillary and says, I'm always going to choose yours. I'll always be on your side.
Yeah.
And then there's a moment later when David comes home. And I will say, David is played by Jack Houston, who plays probably one of the most smarmy people ever on Mayfair Witches. I think he's also a bad guy in Fargo as well. So I'm just like, as much as he's like, sometimes a nice day, I'm like, no, I'll hate you forever because you're Jackie.
But he
comes home and he wants to tell Hillary that Mercy is pregnant, but he's not saying it because the staff are there. And she's like, well, whatever you want to say in front of me, you can say in front of Puri. And then there's a moment where they're still fighting and she's like, no, Puri, like, don't leave. Like, you need to stay. And then he's like, Mercy is pregnant. And then she's like, Puri, can we have a moment to ourselves? And it's like the best examination of like, or example of like, they are employees and they're more than employees, but they're also still employees, you know?
Well, that is why I found Hillary as a character and her relationship with Puri so interesting, because like that part of episode 5 that all happened in? I think so. So incredible to me because Puri is the one who is defending Hillary and saying, no, my missus is like, you know, Hillary is nice to me. She treats me so kindly. She's going to let me go sing, you know, but the thing that Hillary doesn't realize is she's trying to be so kind to Puri, but there is always going to be that divider. You are her employer. And that is that, like you are basically, you have more power than her. You have more authority over her in every sense of that word. And so when you tell her, hey, let me do your makeup, even if she doesn't like it, she's going to sit there and say it looks nice because she can't afford to lose this job. Like she's going to say it looks good, you know? And I think it's so interesting to me that Hillary wants to like gab with her. She wants to gossip with her. She wants to hang out with her, probably because she's missing a bit of a friend in Margaret. She's feeling a little lonely. She's feeling lonesome. But that's just not what their relationship is. And the thing is, like, that's why I thought episode 5 was so interesting, because we get these conversations between Puri and Essie, and we get them between all of the different staff of the expats and all the gossip, right? Like, oh, this one's sleeping with this one's husband and this and that, you know? But I especially loved the scene in episode 5 with Piri and Essie standing in line at a Western Union. And they're like, gosh, it's so busy. Like, but they're, you know, the other day there's only one cashier and blah, 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 blah. They're everyone's sending home money. That was like the whole thing. Everyone has to send home money. And Piri and Essie have this connection in that because of the missing Gus, right? And Piri asks Essie how she's doing. And it was like, this is the first time we're hearing how Essie feels about this, because it took episode 5, because she is not the central, you know what I mean? She is not the main character. She's, even though she is affected, obviously. And I just love that conversation between them. It felt so pure. And it really makes you feel for the characters that are working for the expats, because they're trapped in many ways. They are trapped. They are also not locals, you know, like they're also from somewhere else sending money home. They have families elsewhere. And poor Essie gets basically trapped into following this family to the States when she thought she was going to retire and get to go meet her grandson. And it's awful and it's tragic. And I felt so bad for her.
Yeah. And I think the thing about these like relationships that are, I say more than employee, because like it is inevitably true that like these kids have a relationship with Essie. And so she's like family, but not family. But
and Margaret still, says she's family about a dozen times to everyone she sees.
But still to the point of like when it's like, yeah, we're moving back to America and these kids and we want to bring you, like, yeah, that's the situation you get put in. And if, like, yeah, so it is a really interesting dynamic that's at play. And even you can see the power that they have. Like Hillary gets Mercy fired from her job at the end. She really, you know, in the last episode when she went, she was trying to, she accused her of stealing. So they have such like power to be able to like over these people while all dealing with their own personal, like really hard situations to deal with. Like Margaret has lost a child and is like trying to figure out how you still, you know, you move on for that. Or if you move on, you'll feel guilty when that kid like comes, you know, is found and discovered. And Hillary, whose husband, you know, and then the whole thing where like, yeah, she's been on birth control so that he doesn't use protection, gets Mercy pregnant. That's like, you idiot, David.
Mercy just being like, you didn't think that this could happen, you idiot. Like, did you ever get tested? No.
She no, just said she got tested. Yeah.
So stupid. Yeah. It infuriating. Yeah. Him, David is a character. I mean, like, gosh, kind of hateable in a lot of ways. Also very sympathetic, but like really hateable in other ways.
I really like Clark. The scene where they go and they think it's Gus's body and Clark is trying to be the rock for Margaret. The scene, I mean, we'll get the best scenes, but when she's laughing and she can't stop laughing and Clark like calms her down and then they open the body bag and it's not Gus, and Patrick Clark just like breaks down, because what, like the guilt you feel about the fact that like you don't want it to be your kid. Also, if it is your kid, at least you get closure, but like you don't want it to be your kid, and then it's not your kid, and then it's like, oh my God, whose kid is that? Like there's another kid is dead.
Yeah.
Like it, like that is so complicated. And the way that both of them, like Brian T and Nicole Kidman, play through that scene is so good. Also, best dad ever. He gets him a dog. He's like, hopefully a dog named Chauncey will solve all of the problems we're having. The moments where like, and he's so good with the kids too. When she's trying to like document them in case anything happens, and she's like fully invading their privacy. And then he comes home and he's like, it's okay. You don't have to do, like, he's like being like reasonable, sensible dad. Like, oh, I really like Clark. I liked him a lot.
I really enjoyed the differences in how Clark and Margaret handled their grief.
Yes.
I thought like he turns to religion, but he's trying to like keep it on the down low because he knows that she doesn't like it. She like right away is like, absolutely not. She gets really upset when she sees that the son drew Jesus.
She's
just like, he must have learned this from you.
Yeah.
And so she is very, very against him doing any sort of religious thing. And he is much more private about his grief, I feel, right? Like, she is very much that, like, it is with her at all times, every day, on her face, you can tell. And
the scene where she confronts Hillary at her dinner party, like, outside, is brutal, because it's like, I love arguments in shows where, like, both people can be right.
Yeah.
Like there's where it's like, yes, of course, if you're the parent, you're going to be like, there is maybe evidence that Christopher, the neighbor with the dog, kidnapped my kid. and I'm going to do nothing but try to figure that out. She's going about it in the worst way possible. You should probably just call the police and have them investigate his apartment. And then also Hillary's like, not now. Like, you know, like this.
Yeah, but I have a dinner party.
But from Margaret's point of view, it's like, no, it has to happen. Like,
well, then
nothing is more important in the world, you know? And she gives a brutal line of, you don't know what it's like. You'll never know what it's like to lose a kid because you don't have kids.
So
evil and bad and mean. Yeah.
It's even more interesting because, like, I loved the conversation, I believe it was in episode one, between Margaret and Hillary about motherhood and about whether or not Margaret wants to have a child, or Hillary wants to have a child, that gets interrupted by the kids being loud and chaotic and, like, it's so overwhelming. And then you add that, like, you layer on the argument scene where Margaret says, you will never understand because you're not a mother. And it is like, oh my God, it's a dagger to the heart. But like, yes, she won't understand losing a child because she's not a mother. Like, she will not understand that.
Okay. Also at work, she gets her the key to Christopher's apartment.
She's like,
it's okay, like, I hate it. I hate it. I didn't want it to work. But
let me get back to my baked Alaska, please.
It looks so good.
It did look so good. But yeah, it was just so fascinating. And yeah, like it's brutal. Like the scene, gosh, Clark as a character, like I understand where he's in a way that I can, you know, understand grief in general. Obviously I'm not a parent, I don't know all of that, but like the scene where he is like, I wanted it to be Gus so that I would have closure. Like you can tell. Yeah. And I like that the scene that the show let us linger in that for a second where we see him break down and we don't know if it's Gus or not. Like,
I know.
We don't know. And I was like, I mean, obviously that's not the point of the show, is like, we never find out what happened to Gus. Like, we won't find out. But knowing that Clark feels guilt about Gus going missing because it's his fault that he looks like him, and that's the reason they took him, because even though Clark is not from Hong Kong, he is Asian. He's Asian American. And so by proxy, Gus genetically looks a lot like Clark. And they thought he's like, whoever took him probably thought they could have an easier time getting him across the border. Like, that is the reason he was taken. So it's so interesting that, you know, Margaret is walking around with guilt. You know, Mercy is walking around with guilt, but they rarely zoom in on Clark's guilt. And I thought his source of guilt was so interesting, that he blames himself because of his looks, because it's, you know what I mean? That's so unfair. Like, you can't do anything about that. You know, it's just, I thought the way that even the side characters, and I not Clark isn't a side character, but you know, he's not as explored as heavily as the trio. The way they showed their grief and how they were processing everything, and the fact that it's even more complicated by the fact that, right, she wanted to go home. She wanted to move back to New York City. And he says, no, let's stay for a little longer. They stay. Gus goes missing, and now he wants to move back to New York because he's like, our other kids, they need stability. You know, this isn't right for them. They can't do this. And I don't know. Do we find out, Grace, how long they've been in Hong Kong before all this goes down? Yeah, I mean, they said Essie was with them since Gus was born. So that means like, what, 3 years? I think he's 3 years old or something.
Yeah. I don't know how long they've been there. I want to know. The big thing for me is, what do you think of Margaret's final decision to not go?
I think it's, she feels like it's what she has to do. But gosh, those kids are going to be so messed up about this. Like, I think I can't make that decision for her. However, you still have two kids that need you as an active, aware, like, parent, you know, like, they need you. And it feels like she's abandoning those other two kids in one way, you know, which, again, like, I'm not judging, you know, she felt like she had to do that. But listen, I think Clark understood, and he feels like, I'll take these kids and I'll see you later. But like, how long is she going to stay in Hong Kong until Gus is found? Like, it's been a year. Like, is he ever going to be found? You know, like, that feels like, I don't know. How did you feel about it?
I want to say that I completely disagree, because it's like, you have two of these other kids who I think should be there for. But the other piece that I keep coming back to is, like, I do think that sometimes there are parents who have children, and the best choice is, I don't think people should stay. It's really complicated, and I'm not a parent. And so anything I'm about to say comes with the caveat of, like, I'm not a parent. And so, but I will judge, but also I try not to judge. But, you know, like, my hope would be, so let me give a totally different example. Mm-hmm. I want every queer kid who comes out of the closet to have a parent who supports them and affirms that identity for what they need. There's also parents who will never do that. And so if the option is for that parent to be in that kid's life and for that to be a harmful experience, then I don't want that parent in that kid's life. And I want that kid to have other support systems. Yeah. You know what I mean? So in this essence,
and
in
she's
this instance,
doing harm to them, like very obviously, like obviously the taking of the photos and stuff, that is like such an invasion on them. And like, she's not a present parent currently, right? Like she's not actively parenting them. She is so preoccupied with Gus and everything that like, she can't be present for them.
Yeah. So I would argue there are probably other ways that she could figure out how to be a more present and active parent to her children. But if she is unwilling to do any of those, the problem is that it's like her conscious choice to be doing this. Like, I think I would have maybe liked the show. I would have liked the choice better if it was like Clark, who's like, listen, if you're not going to be like, be able to be an active parent for our children,
yeah,
then we're going to go to America and you can like come when you're ready. And the like moment at the end is like, can she figure out how to like do that? But for it to be, feel like this, like, I don't know. I really love the last scene too, where they're like all walking and then they get like lost into the crowd. So, like, and I think the last scene is like, it's Margaret with a voiceover of Mercy. And then Margaret like blends into the Hong Kong crowd. Like, it's so good. This is there was another thing I watched recently where I thought the same thing. I was like, oh, it's True Detective. I was like, oh, the last scene is so cinematography, like cinema, like cinematically. That's amazing. The message, I don't know if I love it.
Yeah, it's kind of tough, right? Like, I agree with you. And I think the problem is, right? Okay, let's pretend Margaret stays in Hong Kong for 6 months. I don't know, right? Eventually, she's like, okay, I miss my other kids. I have to go back to New York. Now, Essie has been with the kids in the meantime in New York this whole time. And they're going to be even closer to Essie and certainly resent their mother for leaving. But so she's going to have an even bigger problem with Essie.
Yeah, but that's her. She needs, like, again, in this, like, perfect role where she's, like, also okay to go back because she, like, has made peace with, like, whatever happened with Gus. She also has to, like, the thing is I want her to be perfect and she's obviously not perfect. So it's, like, very
flawed,
Yeah, it's like super common. And like, what is the show to be like? This is like, I don't think I'm watching the show being like, and that's how I shall act if I am an expat who lives in Hong Kong. Yeah. It's like, they're just really fascinating people. And I think the idea of like grieving your child, especially without really ever knowing if they are alive or dead, must be so complicated.
It's an impossible thing to ask someone to do because grief is already so complicated. But without closure, grief is even more muddied. And especially when it comes to children, it's impossible. And especially when it comes to like blame, right? Like how many people blame themselves in this situation for what happened to Gus? When realistically, this could happen to anybody. Like you lose your kid for 1 second. You know what I mean? Like that it really could. And so that was something that like was so on my mind watching this. And it was like, how this one thing affects all these characters. It just has this like, what is it called? Like the ripple effect or whatever. Like you toss a stone into water and it's just like, it echoes out from the center. It is all these people think about on a daily basis for the most part.
We say we don't know how to feel. I mean, I have 8 children. I lost them all. I don't know where they are.
Small in a grocery store. They're all somewhere.
I don't know. But you know, you figure you move on.
I also think the way they like wove that's a word, the stories together was so well done. Like I love the addition of Charlie, who then obviously ends up dating Mercy, and then seemingly I think are they broken up by the end? We don't really get a clear answer on that, but
I think so. I think
she was pretty pissed off about the whole thing. Yeah,
and that scene where Mercy breaks down with her mom is like brutal. Very good acting from Ji Young Yoo in that scene.
Yeah, the mother-daughter relationships on this show also just incredible and very interesting. Hillary's, you know, relationship with her mom and the whole elevator situation, and then her going home to visit her dying abusive father, and right before he dies, just telling him off, lying, saying you're pregnant, saying you're having a son, which is what she believes he always wanted. And then saying, oh, he'll remember you. And the way he'll remember you is I will tell him everything you ever did, that every beat that you did to my, every bruise mom had. Like,
yeah. Brutal. And then she's like, she goes to see David. She's like, I killed my dad. It's like brutal.
Yeah. She's like, screaming it in the airport.
I killed my dad. It's brutal.
I killed him.
Yeah. I mean, I don't, I don't know if that's a good or a bad thing, but like she does it. And it's interesting. It's like, so
I mean,
yeah, lying. It's a great, yeah.
I guess I fall on the line of like, you know what?
Yeah, whatever.
He shouldn't have beat his wife. Like that. That's
I totally agree.
Like that's what
and the
did.
Extra.
I don't care.
The extra thing of like he has this whole family that's just like there and like yeah
and them trying to be like oh he's a good guy no absolutely not
yeah I hate that it's like I think like yeah this, well this is the thing where like we've had with like the Me Too movement over the last few years of like you're like but they never treated me weirdly and it's like yeah dude they don't go around like mistreating every single person that they abuse and in fact like it's part of the reason why they might have got away with it so long is because they're very good at like making sure that people don't know. You know, yeah. And they have charm and charisma to like make you think that they would never do it. It's like that's the whole freaking point, you idiot. Yeah. Just believe her.
Ugh. Yeah, it's brutal. Ugh. It's absolutely brutal. But again, like it's like so good because it's just like oh, these characters are so good. But let's start talking to some superlatives. Now let's start with best scene, which gosh is hard because it's full of good scenes.
I have two. I think. One, I do think is like, it's exactly what the laughing and the autopsy, like going to identify the body and then Clark breaking down and crying is just tremendously well acted. It's so complicated, the emotions that you have to play through. So good. And then the other one that I just like friggin' love, I will say Mercy crying is also another one. Like her mom, her awkward relationship with her mom and they're coming home or she's like, you seem fat. And she can't be like, yeah, it's because I'm pregnant. It's like,
yeah,
I love that. And then the women singing Eye of the Tiger by Katy Perry for a show that is about like these strong women. All of these women, like what I think is really interesting, like they have these moments where they break down. But the most part, I would say like they're very like strong women. It's the one of the personalities that I think like all of them have. Maybe Mercy the most like, but like she's younger, so that makes sense to me that like she isn't always as confident as she sometimes can be. That song, I love, my nieces sing it and I love it as like women empowerment song. Roar by Katy. I think I called Eye of the Tiger, which is not the song. It's actually Roar by Katy Perry. It's to say I've got the Eye of the Tiger, but I love that song and I love the like choir version of it being sung in the show.
Gosh, there's so many good scenes. But like I can think of two off the top of my head. Both of them are in episode 5. I really love the scene that I mentioned earlier in line at Western Union between Puri and Essie. I thought like it was so pure. Like it was just someone checking in on someone else.
Yeah.
And like I just thought their relationship was very interesting because to me it seemed like they're not usually very close, but they know of each other because they work in the same building and they both work for expats. And them just connecting in that moment, I really loved. And the other one was just because of the dynamics I thought were so interesting and it was so layered. Was the whole moment between Puri and Hillary when Hillary is doing her makeup and then when they're drinking wine together.
Right.
Like I just thought.
Whoa. The best example is the next morning where she's like, I'm sick, I'm staying in bed, but Puri had to wake up early and then has to make her eggs. Like, it's the
and
best
she walks
example.
In and goes like, oh, morning. And she's all excited. And then we notice, right, Hillary, just yesterday was like, oh, call me Hillary. And then she's like, oh, I need you to make me these eggs, blah, blah, blah. Yes, miss. And she like leaves and she puts the dress away. It is devastating because she said, oh, Hillary is different. She's different than the others. And she's not. She doesn't understand. They were so episode 5 was just filled with good scenes, but those were just two that stood out to me.
Is it? You mentioned that it actually played at TIFF. I didn't go see it, but they played that episode as like a full, it's an hour and 40 minutes. So it's a full episode.
It
full
makes
movie.
Sense to me. It totally stands on its own. I could totally see why
I agree.
Did that. Best character, Grace. This is a tough one. There's a lot of them.
I think I know who you're going to pick. So I'll just pick someone different. So I'll pick Mercy. Mm-hmm. I really like Mercy. And then I'll give a little bonus point, a little shout out to, I was going to say Clark, but maybe last minute I want to say Chauncey. No, I'll say Clark. I'll say my little bonus point for Clark, but Mercy is my favorite character.
Yeah, I have to give it to Hillary. I just thought she was so interesting. And like, again, Nicole Kidman as Margaret is incredible.
Yeah.
I just think like we've seen it in Big Little Lies. Like we've seen this sort of character. Whereas Hillary, I thought she was so definitely different than most characters I've seen. And I thought just her being, you know, Indian American and her mom, like it was just so fascinating to watch her, especially like the choices she's making. Right. I was always interested in the choices she was making. So yeah, yep. For me, Hillary was the best.
Yep.
Worst character.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, there aren't too many bad characters.
I think it's probably David though. David's
He sucks in terms of like stuff he did. Yeah. Like not great.
Yeah. But I think he's See, I normally do.
It could be other way. Like it could be a character or it could be like a character you felt like was underdeveloped or, you know, whatever.
I mean, I like the idea that Clark would look to explore his grief strategy somewhere else, but the religious stuff doesn't really like.
I was going to say the same thing that like, I felt like I didn't, there were scenes that had the pastor in them that I was like, I don't know that I needed this, you know, like, or maybe, I don't know. I don't know that I was looking for more from the pastor, but like, I don't know.
And Christopher, the dog neighbor. Yeah.
Oh yeah. He was just a red herring. It felt like, right. Yeah. Like we're supposed to think maybe he was involved in something to do with Gus, but
do we ever find out why he had a picture of Gus? We never find out. Right.
Well, ooh. I think in my opinion, they seeded it that like Gus loved his dog. Right. We see him pet his dog so many times.
Yeah.
It probably was true. Just, he took a picture of him with the dog one of the times, you know, true. Like I think it was just an innocent photo.
True.
That like, of course, Margaret spirals as one would if you think you have a lead, you know, your son's missing.
Mm-hmm. We should say if you like the show, Lulu Wang, who did the teleplay for the first episode, directed every episode, also directed the movie The Farewell, which is so good. If you haven't seen it, it's Awkwafina goes back home. She's American. She goes back to China to see her grandmother, who she learns only has a short time to live. So if you would also like to... It's very funny. And also, if you just want to be devastated and cry, you should go watch The Farewell.
Okay. So what about your superlative, Grace?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go hang out in Hong Kong for a little bit. Although I think, yeah I know this thing had controversy because like, I think Hong Kong is heavily suppressed by by China. So, you know,
that was part of episode 5 was all the drama with the protests and the, you know, stuff going on politically there.
In the last episode, they're like, yeah, don't worry. We got rid of all the people who want democracy.
Yeah, like,
Oh man. Yeah. But I will visit Hong Kong. I'll visit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely also up there in terms of my options for a superlative, but also one that made me pretty terrified to be a parent just because of how devastating it could be.
it
was very scary.
Yeah, my brother has said like he can't watch anything that's like about this content anyway. He like as soon as he had a kid, he's like, oh no, can't watch that.
I'm sure you absolutely everything gets marked off that list. Yeah, cannot do it. Theme song, it did not have one, to my recollection.
No, it did not.
So it's not gonna make that list.
No, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, they should have done something, but
they could have done something. But they didn't. I thought the opening though was incredible. Like you mentioned earlier, just having Mercy with the voiceover, and then you find out that like, my God, David is the one who paralyzed his brother, and you know what I mean? Like it's crazy.
The cinematography on the show was amazing, like so stunning. Good. But yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then what's next for us next week? We're going to be covering the show Death and Other Details. My guy, Mandy Patinkin.
There's been a murder.
It's been a murder.
Yeah. Murder mystery show. I haven't watched any of this. Have you watched?
I watched one episode like when it originally came out, which was like a few weeks ago at this point. It was okay. Which I think is about what I've heard about this as well. It's like, it's okay.
He's got a great name. His name is Rufus Coatsworth.
So. Oh, yeah. Mandy Patinkin's character. Sorry if you're watching the video.
I just seem like...
You'll notice? No, no. If you're watching the video, you'll see that my camera might be shaking right now. And it's because my dog is going under my desk. And like, if you have a dog that likes butt scratchies, you'll know what this means. But like, he's like rubbing the top of his back on my desk.
Yes. So. Quick anecdote. They're doing some construction. They're building a laneway house outside of my house. And so I'm in the basement apartment here. So I have all the utilities. So every once in a while they have to come in and like turn off the electricity or like they have to deal with the water. Today we had an electrician in and there is one of the employees that Luna loves, and it was very funny. The one electrician came in, he was doing the work, and then there was a knock on the door on the other electrician. He came in. I said, yeah, you can come on in. And he goes, oh yeah, I just have the cord. And Luna so fast got out from under the bed to be like, it's the guy I like. It's the guy I like. It's the guy. And she went over and she just like hung out with him the whole time, just stood up to him and like looked at him. And it's because he pets her.
Of course, he pets her.
And he's
her,
like, this is such a good dog. Hi, Luna, whatever. And then he left and she went under the bed. And the other electrician was like, wow, really makes you feel away when, like, well, you don't pet her. You don't pet her. Yeah, the other guy pets her.
She would visit you.
She would visit you. Yeah,
that is so funny.
Very funny.
Relatable content. Yeah, my dog will approach anybody. No one is a stranger. But yeah, he just wanted to rub his butt on my desk and shake the camera. So thank you for that, Winston. But yeah, Death and Other Details is next week. I believe it is a Hulu show. So that's where you can check it out if you want to do so. Grace, what else you have going on? You got some top tens happening.
Yes. So as I said, we recorded the top 10 episodes of TV. That'll be out this Wednesday, March 6th. So look out for that. You can fill out the polls. We'll be doing movies the week after, TV characters the week after that. And then finally, best TV show since 2014. The show had to have had its first episode in 2014 or later. A fun little Josh Wigler caveat, although I do think it's fun to talk about shows that have only existed since Post-Show Recaps also existed. Yes. So that's fair. Aaron and I shall be chatting about Dune Part 2, which is by far and away the best movie of the year so far, and maybe my favorite movie of the past 10 years, spoiling my bracket. Yeah, it's so good. It's so good. It's so good.
High
praise. Very good. And yeah, anything else I'm doing, I'm on social media at Hi From Grace. And
you can follow me at the Just Sterling. As usual, I'm over on Shit 90 Shows Taught Me, talking about Buffy, talking about Felicity. And then very recently, I announced I'm going to be starting another new podcast called Talking Shit.
No shit.
Talking.
Oh, yeah. No, there is. Oh.
There is. We're talking
there actually
shit.
Is. It's not no. It's
but there is no G in talking. That's how you can find us. And we're going to be talking about Schitt's Creek. And so it's Shit, S-C-H-I-T-T, if you are trying to find us. Schitt's Creek is an incredible show, a great Canadian sitcom, of course. It's so good, and I'm so excited. I'm going to talk about it with my friend Stuart. I'm going to be doing that every week. So check us out at Talkin' Shit is where you can find us on all social media. And I think we have a website. There's a whole bunch of crap going on. So follow me, and I retweet everything.
There's a whole bunch of what going on?
There's a whole bunch of shit going on. that's what I have going on. And until next week, you've been fully spoiled.
You've been fully recapped.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.